May 31st, 2012, is SWAT from Pedro's show.
Thank you.
Out there, it's Watt from Pedro Show. I'm in my Pedro pad. Start off with John Coltrane. I want to talk about you from 1960, if I recall, 62 in Denmark, Copenhagen. And then it being May 31st, I thought, yeah, maybe I should play some Blue Oyster Cult. Then came the last days of May. Off their first album there. Before work, second man drummer Jerry Trebetich came over and gave me this little interview, a little spiel about his journey through music. And without further ado, here we go, Mr. Jerry Trebetich. How did you get started? You were born?
I was born, well, not in Pedro, I was born in Harbor City, which is
next door,
and that's where the hospital was. But I was born there, of course, I was raised in Pedro,
yeah,
right in the middle of town. They always ask me, what part of town are you from? I say the middle, because that's where I was, in the middle.
Yeah, but for some people, they don't know what the middle
they don't know what the middle of Pedro is.
I guess it's like where the high school is, 13th.
Daniels Field is right in the middle. 12th. Yeah, it was right there. So.
12th and Gaffney. I would call that.
Where the high schools both played football and they had soccer matches on the weekends and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. You know? So you grew up in the middle.
I grew up
and when did you first get into music? I'm talking about not playing.
Just hearing. Listening and hearing stuff and listening. It's probably when I got my first little transistor radio, because we used to have those a lot when we were kids, you know, AM, FM transistor, but I didn't listen too much to the FM, the AM, and the AM.
You got a radio for Christmas?
Probably for Christmas, a little small handheld one, you know. You put a couple batteries in it, carry the thing around. And I would flip-flop through the AM channels that were playing music and listen to those, you know.
Yeah,
didn't think too much about the FM in the early days, but, you know.
So you're hearing stuff off the radio.
I'm hearing stuff off the radio like Sweet or like T-Rex and stuff like that, you know. Fox on the Run. I remember that song when I was 8 or 9 years old, just blasting through that little transistor radio.
And no records.
No records at the time. My mom used to go and shop around at these thrift stores or places that would be giving stuff away. And she would come home with stacks of singles. And we had a record player in the house, so... She brings giant pile of singles, and I sit there on the record player, and I put them on one by one, listening to them. You know, Aerosmith, or the OJs, or, you know, just whatever singles were...
But you weren't getting these. These were from your mom.
My mom would pick them up and go, here, listen to this stuff. And I go through, you know, you find...
Stuff you like.
A lot of 70s, 60s and 70s stuff, yeah. Not too much of the Beatles.
You're talking about... The 45s with a big hole.
That's right. You had to put the little clip in, or you had to put the little disc on the player and put it at 45.
Right.
And I would play these records and start listening to all this stuff. And I'd hear, you know, some stuff was good, some stuff was crap. A lot of disco, I guess, you know, whenever they're playing.
When did you start buying your own records?
Oh, it was probably, I was junior high. Started buying albums then.
Your first album was?
The first one I bought with money, my own money, was, I think, AC/DC Back in Black. And I was like 1981 or something like that. So I was about 13 or 14 years old.
Okay.
And that's because, you know, I was doing little jobs around the neighborhood or whatever, delivering newspapers, mowing lawn. I saved a little bit of money, and that's what I used the money for, is to go buy records.
Go buy records.
And usually try to buy them used, sometimes new.
At that time, what was in Pedro? Was Redwood still here?
Redwood Records was still there up on Western.
Well, you know, they were in Pacific before that.
Yeah, I don't remember,
you don't remember
Pacific.
That?
There was also like... You know,
yeah, they were on Pacific before he... Because do you remember a time that part of Western was open fields?
Oh, that was...
Strip malls
way, that was... But that was like, you know, I was in junior high by this time. They had developed that stuff up. When I was a kid, yeah, there
you
was...
Remember it, fields?
Dairy fields.
Remember
there was cows. There was a dairy.
And then Union 76, there's some of
there was goats
oil.
Out there. There was all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was all open fields, and then the cemetery was there.
So when you put that strip, when they put the strip mall in there, or one of them, many of them got put up
there. He moved up there in the beginning, yeah. So that's where I remember him being, because that's when I was buying records.
There was a place next to Vaughn's in Park Western, which is maybe one of the first Pedro, like, strip mall plazas.
Yeah.
Right? Western Park Western.
Was there, what was up there?
Was there one before that? Vaughn's was there. Save
no,
Vaughn's
was there. Was there a record
music
store?
Chuck Sound of Music.
There was a. That,
you
the,
remember
the,
that
music store? I remember
maybe
that.
That's before you too.
No,
that had records and it had music instruments.
I sort of remember that, but I don't remember going there very.
If you're looking at where Vaughn's was,
yeah,
it'd be to the left a couple doors.
Yeah,
actually, it was next to a Kenny Shoes that some old lady drove her car through accidentally.
Not good.
Pretty sure. This is a long time ago. The other side of Vaughn's had Dick's Toy Circus.
Yeah, that was
like
a stationery store.
Well, it turned into that later.
Yeah.
It was Dick's Toy Circus.
I remember that place, too.
Maybe there was Christmas cards and shit in there, but there was toys for sure. Because the guy there gave me his, can't remember his name, but he gave me his little H.O. race car set. Yeah, a cat there. Believe it or not. Very kind. I guess he was getting too old.
Uh-huh.
And I remember them picking the cars off because they'd fly off so many times. It was like Hot Wheels. You'd have the little sides. So, Redwood, because they did bring in a chain store, huh?
There was the warehouse, which was right down there across the street at the next strip mall that was built down there. Right by the Oshman's, which I used to actually work at. So, you know,
that's a whole other job.
Yeah, it's a whole other world.
Yeah. Now back to this. So you're buying your first records.
Yeah.
When do you get on this idea of wanting to play?
You know, when I was young, my brother always had played. You know, as far as I can remember, he had picked up guitar early. Maybe when I was 5 or 6, he's 4 years older than me. And he was playing guitar. He started playing when he was 8 or 9 years old. So he was playing around all the time, and always playing records.
This is before you got the radio.
Before the radio, but like it didn't really influence me that much. He was just my annoying brother who played guitar.
Yeah.
But as time went on, you know, he liked rock and roll. He liked Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, and rock bands.
And what's he doing? Like kind of trying to play the
records? He's playing along with the records, learning songs, and playing his own little songs. And you know, always as I was growing up, you know, he's around playing, and he started having bands, and he'd have them in the bedroom, which, you know, my bedroom was...
But they're doing prac.
They're doing prac. Now, he kept the shit always set up, and so...
You're talking drum set.
Everything. All the crap. All set up in the room.
So and I had some buddies, musician buddies?
Yeah, I had, like, Pedro guys that he went to school with, and, you know, you can imagine this room's only 12 by 12. There's two of us living in it. I mean, it's two beds,
yeah.
Two dressers, one closet, a bass amp, a guitar amp, and a drum set. There's like, how much room is really left for me?
Nothing.
Yeah. So, yeah, the music was around from him. You know.
Now, what age are you? You're in grade school.
Oh, I'm probably the elementary school to junior high. While he's, you know, junior high to high school. He's playing in the bands then, and that's about the time. So I was anywhere from like 10 or 11 to about 14.
So what? When do you eventually? Well, there was always a drum set
sitting in the bedroom, you know, and maybe when I was 10 or 11, I'd sit on it once in a while, bang around on it. I really wasn't that good at it because I didn't understand the mechanics or how to make everything.
You didn't watch
make
him?
Sounds. No, I watched the guy.
Oh,
like,
Nonak
Ortega was playing drums with Mike at the time. My brother Mark, Mike Ortega.
Nonak.
Lots of drums out of Nonak.
So you're watching him.
Watching Nonak, yeah. Maybe, you know, he's a little spazzy, kind of rock and roll drummer.
He's not playing anymore, is he?
I really don't know. I haven't talked to him in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you
okay,
know,
so you're watching him. You're
watching him, kind of getting the idea.
And then when he's not around, you jump on his
And then I go and I jump and I bang around. And then I thought, you know what?
Did he ever find out?
Huh?
Did he ever find out you were on his drums?
Oh, I don't think he gave a fuck.
Okay.
He didn't care. He was kind of a freewheeling dude.
Yeah, but you know? He didn't know you were on there? You didn't change shit?
No, I didn't move the stuff around. You don't want to get caught, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Moving stuff around. I know how I'd feel if I sat in the drum set and people come move around. I get pretty like, who's touching my drum? You!
So what happened? When you...
Yeah, so I did that for a little while, and I thought maybe that's not my thing. So I actually bought a bass. And I had like a little 3/4 scale bass.
Who was playing bass with your brother?
At the time, he went through a couple of different guys. This guy, Todd Conroe. Who else played bass? Jesus, I can't remember. Todd did it for a while, and I can't remember because like after a while, my brother just did his own thing, and I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, I know.
After a while. But that was the guy that originally...
But you got a bass, so this is why I'm wondering if you watched his bass guys.
Yeah, but that dude wasn't that good anyway. I just got the bass. Somebody sold it to me for like $20. I bought a set of strings for it, and somehow I had a little tiny sidekick amp or some kind of thing. Maybe 12. Getting the bass, and I started trying to figure out. I couldn't even tune the thing. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah. And this guy wouldn't help you?
Well, I didn't really ask. I was just doing things on my own and trying to figure it out. I had a little air organ in the living room, and I tried to use that to tune it, but that, you know, I really didn't know what I was doing.
So this thing's in your room with the drum set?
I had the bass, but I didn't have my little amp in there. I had to put it in another room because my brother wanted to let me have my thing going on in our room.
Right.
I had to go have my own space.
How long did you do that?
I tried that for 3 or 4 months, and I think maybe I had my brother tune it once for me just to get it tuned.
Yeah.
Because he had perfect pitch, so he could just tune things up really quick on a guitar, anything, bass. He knew when things were out of tune, he can tell, you know. He's very quick at tuning. And he tuned it up for me once, but I really didn't pay enough attention and know what I was doing. So I kind of gave up on that,
medicinal consequence. The breathalyzer, the fountain of youth. Hydrants cross their noses in their parachutes. From super clear airplane school. Calendar calls, it beckons like a beacon. Mother's milk and magnets. 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 Mother's milk and magnets.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. You just heard Lament for the Leaving of the Isle of Lewis. Brother Steve McKay with, I think, the drummer of Sicara and two people local to where that was played live. Yeah, that was from just about a month ago in Shanghai, China. Brother Steve McKay going there for the first time. One day I hope to play there too. And India and Africa, there's so much of the world I haven't been to. People say I get around, but think about it. So right on for blazing the trail for me there, Brother Steve. And also Scott Neidiger to helping him get over. Before that, we had The Wit of the Staircase from Dot Hacker, new band with bass brother Jonathan. Hope to have him on the show soon as a guest. Ahead of that was Mother's Milk and Magnets by Robert Pollard off his new solo album. And then Mr. Shimmy with his little solo mini album, I guess that's what he calls it, 60% of Places in the Moonlight. In front of that was Leave My Body by Yo Mama. Something new from John there in Nashville. He's got a whole album coming out, or maybe it's a double album. He's got a buttload of music coming. Can't wait to play it. And we started off with Coming Back from Sawako. We continue on now with the musical journey of San Pedro drummer Jerry Trebitich.
I was in junior high, and I had a friend who I knew from elementary school, this guy Matt Chamberlain, who still plays today.
He's a drummer.
He's kind of a well-known guy for studio work. And I knew him since second grade, and he was playing in marching band over there at Dana. And he asked, he goes, hey, you want to play drums? Come over here and just join the class. You don't need to know what you're doing. So I said, okay. And I went in there.
They don't really do trap set, right?
No, it's tenor drums, snare, bass drum. Everybody's playing.
It's for marching.
Usually single drum, sometimes tri-tom, the three drum thing that you mount in front.
It's for marching.
For marching, yeah. But it's all, you know, everybody playing is an ensemble.
Parades.
Rhythm part. You can learn the basics. You just use your
it's
arms.
For parades and
marching
for,
in place kind of thing.
Getting the spirit up at the football games.
Yeah, good way to get your chops from the basic, I don't
but
know
no
what
trap
I'm doing.
Kit.
No trap kit. Some guys did in junior high play trap.
Oh,
but
the,
they were
the
orchestra.
Band.
They were part of the orchestra, yeah. And they're playing the orchestra.
This isn't that.
This is just like a marching band marching. Thing. So I decided to go and do that. And then he also was playing in a youth band, which is like a summer band. It was for kids from around the schools to join. So in summertime, they can go march parades and do field shows.
This is a school?
This is no. This is outside the school. It's private. It was a youth band. And it was just the kids from
Boys
the local
club?
Schools coming in. You can only be 21 years or younger, you know, and you age out after, you know. So it was all kids. And he got me to join that. And that turned out to be much
How
better.
How did you get into it?
He just found it. I mean, like, the kids in the local junior high and high school
knew
about it. And they would go and they'd tell him, yeah, you know, we're playing this youth band during the summer to keep our chops up and do our thing. So
what was it part of?
It was really kind of private, but they were associated
private.
With some of the school directors, music directors in the area, but it wasn't school affiliated in any way. It was just
so you start playing with these.
So
guys.
I started playing with them, and the guy that was instructing the drums in there.
That wasn't just marching.
It was marching, and I was doing field shows though, like formation field shows, you know, like when you go out on the football.
But no band.
But not regular rock and roll band. It was just, to me...
We're not a rock band, like... Because at school, the bands weren't really rock.
No, a marching band thing, but...
No, not marching band. I'm saying separate from marching band. There was... Well, we had them at Dotson, and Pedro High had them, too. There was a band...
Orchestra.
Yeah.
It was orchestra, which is... No, this was like a marching band.
And it was kind of like a brass band,
but
most of the stuff.
Yeah,
Most of the guys in
it's wood
marching
bands,
band.
Horns, just like you would in a high school band, tuba,
but
that
they're playing
stuff.
Sitting down.
Marching parades, you have people with flags.
No,
Jared,
I'm talking about the other side of it.
Oh, the other side, the orchestra.
Where they're sitting... Because a lot of those people were in both.
Yeah, orchestra was in school was more
also,
or less.
Also, they had violins.
Yeah, the orchestra.
They had cellos.
They would have the school production, and the orchestra would be playing the music for the school production.
Right.
And they,
or assemblies.
That's really back when they like schools had good budgets for the music programs, which I don't think they do as much anymore, unless you go private.
We're talking about older days, Jerry.
Anyway, older. This is,
I don't think
this
they
is
they
the
do
way
either.
Back.
I
machine.
Think they only use bands now for marching at sports things.
I mean, unless you're in college where they have big programs.
No, I'm talking about the high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. High school, I don't know.
Because Fleet told me this is the reason why he started his Silver Lake Music Conservatory, because he went back to Fairfax. There was no more music program.
It was wiped out. I mean, that's kind of the...
And he said that's how he got caught on music, so he thought he got weirded out and went and did that. But anyway, so you're playing with marching band, you're playing with the youth band in the summer.
The youth band, Los Caballeros.
Yeah, Cowboys.
Yeah.
So what do you get?
So I learned my chops doing that. I kind of worked my way up and playing bass drum, tri-toms, to snare.
No, when do you get on the trap?
The trap, well, that came at the same time. So what I did was I was playing marching band. I started getting better with my chops. And I had some money left over from some oddball jobs I'd been doing. And I found an ad in the newspaper for an old black Premier drum set for sale, $100.
But you weren't jumping on the other kit.
There wasn't a kit over in the marching band. No.
No,
back in the bedroom. Oh, I banged on it a little bit. But by this time, my brother had moved the band out of the bedroom. And he was in the garage, and then he was out of the garage. My dad kind of ran him out of the house. So he went someplace else to practice. The band, poof, all the gear's gone, poof, band gone. Yeah. There's no traps that.
But you go and you buy one.
So I go and buy one after I'd done my time, a little time learning my chops in marching band, and put it in the side room. We had a sewing room in our house, and I put it in there. I turned that into my bedroom, and I just kept the drums in there, and I kind of soundproofed it, and I started banging away out there on the drums, you know.
To what, like records?
Just the records. I had little headphones, and I plug it into my little Walkman, and I play cassettes, play along with it, play along with the radio, whatever.
What about Chamberlain? He show you
Chamberlain? No, he was kind of doing his own thing. You know, he played marching band, and then he bought a drum set, and he had like a little trailer in his backyard. He stuck it in there, and then he just disappeared into the trailer. I never saw him again. You know, kind of call him up once in a while to get him to go do something. Most of the time, he was in the trailer playing his drums, and you know, going quick through the.
But he quit the youth band.
He sat for a couple of years. He wasn't doing it. Neither was I. I lost interest. But it did give me my chops, you know. I can have hand chops, and I had to learn the feet part by buying
drums. Well, traps is a whole thing.
Yeah, it's a whole different monster. It's like, you know, you're not marching in place and doing parades in 105 degrees down desert streets.
No, but it can get sweaty.
It does get sweaty, but you know, just like I was turned off by marching in 105 degrees down the desert street. After that, I said, I'm done.
A lot of the gigs seem like they're like marching down the street at 100 degrees.
No shit. But I'm sitting down.
But it's different. Or bouncing different. On the tailbone.
It's different because I want to be in that 105 degree club or whatever.
Anyway, you start playing on this thing. When do you start playing with other people?
Well, that took a while. I didn't have a lot of confidence in the beginning, so...
So you're just jamming to headphone stuff.
Headphone stuff, and then after a while, you know, my parents split up, and when that happened, we had a house that was in the backyard that nobody lived in, and it was full of junk. And we got rid of all the junk, we threw it all away, and once it was done, there's a 2-room house in the back, so I took one of the rooms and soundproofed it up and put the drums back there. So I had bigger room to go crack in. Now it was big enough I could.
But you're still by yourself.
Still by myself, just banging away at it, and just I think maybe 4 or 5 years of just playing on the drum set, just to records and just jamming, not playing with anybody.
Really?
Just so I needed to get my confidence. I never felt confident enough to call somebody up and say, "Hey, I want to play drums in your band."
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd be good enough, and I don't know if it was like a fear.
Well, it came eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
after a while,
what happened? Did somebody pluck you, or did you call someone?
No, I found an ad in
the
Recycler.
So you did call someone.
I found an ad in the Recycler magazine, you know, papers, a newspaper that sold stuff, you know, musical instruments.
It was a free weekly.
Yeah, it was a free weekly. It also
ads were free. I think it cost us $1.
Band seeking drummer, drummer seeking band, that kind of thing.
But if you use cars, all my music
everything,
equipment,
A lot of equipment.
Computer shit, all my old computers.
Bicycles, you
old
name
Mac
it. Yeah, this,
from there.
It was just like, it was like a penny saver on steroids.
Or what they call it now, Craigslist.
Yeah, it was very useful in the old days, and I answered an ad.
Is that where you got your drum set?
No. Yeah. I think I did.
Right?
Yeah.
So
I found another side.
Okay.
So I had
now. Thing. Now there's a personal ad, different than selling something. What, these guys are looking for a drummer?
I was looking for somebody seeking drummer.
You put an ad in.
No, I was looking for somebody seeking drummer.
Okay.
Band seeks drummer.
You're looking for ads. You found an ad.
Pretty much,
yeah.
So band seeking drummer.
Right, you call up this number.
I called the number, and it turned out to be Johnny Aralika, you know, and it wasn't Tone Vidicich, who's also, you know, a friend of ours,
yeah.
But it was Johnny. He was a teenager, maybe 15 or 16, you know, a couple years older than him, and he was looking for a drummer. So I answered the ad, and I brought the drums over to his mom's house and started playing with him there.
Did he have a band, or was it just
It was just Johnny writing songs, and he kind of had an idea. He had his friend Phil playing bass, who wasn't really that good, and... you know, and he had ideas.
So you start jamming with him.
So I jammed with him, and it happened. It went like for a little while.
Working out his own songs.
Yeah, working out. It all sounded like U2 to me, because he was way into the U2 thing back then.
But you guys weren't really copying. You were doing
original
songs.
No, we did a couple covers, but mostly like trying to do Johnny's songs, yeah. And doing some covers too, just to kind of get together.
How old are you?
Yeah, I was maybe 18 or 19, 18.
Just out of high school.
Yeah, just about the time when I started making phone calls, right out of high school. And then
for a few months.
Yeah, that didn't last too long. But I totally stayed friends with him because he's a good guy. So you know, yeah. I eventually figured I'd do something else with him, which I did. And then I went back to the paper and looked for another ad, and I found this ad for another band speaking drummer, and there's this guy John Martisich, who's in town, who's a you know, punk rock bass player, and he had a studio, and he basically had himself. You know, and he needed to put the band together, so he put the seeking drummer, seeking guitarist. Yeah. I showed up, so it started out with just me and him playing, and then his tunes. It was his tunes, yeah, kind of straight punk, almost sounded a little bit like X. You know, he was looking for a female singer. He loved X, so he was like looking for a female singer to do that, you know, that off key kind of double vocal thing like X does, and everybody he searched for, he put those. You know, influences, and that's what he got, and it started sounding like that.
But who's the other guys?
The other guys? A guy named Dean, guitar player. I can't remember Dean's last name. And then Megan Hoffman, she was a singer, girl from Torrance.
Yeah.
And then Bill Enkowitz, who's a local guitar player here in town that was playing some band. He had been in the Upsetters, and he had a band called Population 3 and some of the bands in town. We got him to play, and he was... He was really good, you know, at the time. I mean,
so what are you doing? You're just jamming. You guys don't do any gigs.
No, we did get. We started getting the songs together.
So these are your first gigs.
This is coming up to my first gig. Really, yeah. My first gig was doing it with those guys. So we practiced for a few months, and we got down about 11 or 12 songs, all kind of short.
Set.
They got us set enough, and he booked us a show at the Dancing Waters here in San Pedro.
Yeah.
And so I just told everybody about it, and we got this band. We went up there and did it.
Watch for Pedro show. Yet another chunk of spiel from Jerry Trepetich, San Pedro drummer man, longshore man, family man, and a good cat. And his story's interesting, you know. I'm learning stuff that I've been playing with the guy 17 years. I got no gigs this weekend. God, when's the last time that happened? There was one time this year so far it was like that. But yeah, kind of trippy. Brother Sam out in Brighton, England wants me to lip sync a... No, he really wants me to sing from the kayak. I'll tell you about it more. It's May 31st, 2012, Watt Pedro show. First hour. Hold tight for hour two. May 31st, 2012. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show. We'll be right back. Swat from Pedro show. Started the second hour off there with Death Watch on the American Empire by Damsel. A Damsel band with, again, Brother Jonathan, bassman for Dot Hacker, along with the drummer Zach Mann from Sacktown. What's his band called? God, it was two guys and then it was five and now it's back to I don't know what it is now, but yeah, Brother Nick did something with him too called Bygones. Well, anyway, Nels Klein's part of it too, as you might well tell by the guitar. Man, I can't think of what band. Here, we'll play more of the Jer interview. Second band drummer Jerry Trebetich. Also, I should say, former Madonna B drummer also. Continue on with his self-explained Journey Through Music about from Pedro show.
And it went pretty good. It went all right. We drew
what's
a lot of
people. Called,
it was called Joyride.
Yeah,
Joyride. And now there's another Joyride now.
It was
that
Steve Soto.
Steve
Soto, the bass man from Agent Orange. And
yeah, that's a totally different thing.
I know, but that was an Orange County one.
You I don't know what year he...
Remember for a while he was a doorman at Doll Hut.
Yeah.
Big butt.
But what year did he... I don't know what year he started his Joyride, because this was in 1987. So maybe...
No.
He wasn't.
I think it's a little later, his Joyride.
Yeah, so we already had it. But then again, it's such a simple name. I'm sure there was every city had a freaking Joyride going on.
Well, I just know Steve Soto's.
Yeah, I've heard of his too. But this is the, you know.
Okay, so how long this lasts?
We recorded a couple songs. I wish I knew where they were. They're probably on cassette somewhere in my garage. I
should fish them out.
I think there was something. We made a little demo. And yeah. There's a song.
That's as far as it went?
We did a few shows, and what happened was the band was kind of starting to falter after about a year. People kind of were starting to waver and go their own way.
Yeah.
And John was thinking about restructuring the band, so he decided, I might get this new guitar player. So he gets this new guitar player, and everybody else is gone. So it's just me, John's new guitar player. I go and do a show.
Now, why are they gone?
I don't know what John's
they just playing.
And he's like, I'm not in charge of the band. I was just the drummer. And everybody's gone. And now it's this other dude.
Okay.
And we do a show basically with no prac at a party in Pedro. And right after the show, I just started going to college. And that was like the first week of school. I went to my buddy's house after school. He had a big half pipe ramp that we had built. And I was riding the half pipe ramp, and I went flying off the top of the half pipe, and I landed right in my arm, and I just snapped it in half like Gumby. Just totally snapped my arm.
Gumby would have been all bendy.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it looked like. It was all bendy. It was like perpendicular wrist.
But he would have back. It would have broke. He's
like
clay.
Luckily, you know, my arm was there to break my fall. Otherwise, I would have cracked my head open. I don't think I was even wearing a helmet.
No, so, you should have fucking tucked your shoulder in and did the roll.
Oh, I launched off the top of the
ramp.
That's what I'm saying. I was 12
feet. You would have tucked it in.
12 feet straight up in the air and then straight down. I came down like a giant hailstone and just crashed.
You fall enough, you start.
Yeah, there was no tuck and roll. Yeah, it was just dead stop.
His tuck and look.
Tuck and roll is good if you're going forward, Mike, and you have forward
or
momentum.
Back.
This is vertical momentum.
Last week at the Alcazar in Seville, I went down and I tucked and rolled.
Tuck and roll, man. I believe in it thoroughly. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I know
the worst thing
it.
You can do is put your arms out because this is what happens. Yeah, but it's a natural instinct. Remember, I dislocated my arm and coming through that hatch last fall.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a natural thing to do. But what you want to do is kind of fight it and tuck in.
I spent a lot of my youth.
So what happened? Kids. You're out of action. You can't play drums.
I know my tucking roll. I can't play drums.
John.
And I called John up and go, hey, John, I broke my arm. I can't do the gig coming up. And he goes, you're fired. And I go, what? He goes, you fucking ride that skateboard, you're fired. And that was it. He just fired me right there. And I was like, I lost my first gig. Yeah, because I broke my arm. I didn't feel like it was for my playing. It was more for my
hands. You seen him lately?
Yeah, he lives in Colorado. I haven't seen him in a while.
Gotta wait till you go out on tour.
He lives in Crested Butte. It's kind of hard to get up there.
Yeah.
He has to do you're doing some kind of alpine gig.
snowboard.
I like snowboard.
No, but there's this circuit where people play snowboard clubs.
We should do that. Because well, then, then I have a chance
that's
to put
one way
the
to see him. So what happens, Jerry? You got to heal up from
that. So I got to heal up. I'm out of that. And I was like, well,
I shot out.
That band's all shot out. I'm out for a couple months because I'm in a bent arm cast. I really fucked
so
my
arm.
So
you get it off? You start playing again?
I start getting off. It took a while to get the muscles back and everything. It takes a while.
Of course.
And this is probably what the time I'm about 21 at the time, 20 or 21. And I'm kind of floundering around with not what to do, and I start playing with a guy named Joe DeLiva in town and his friend Sean Mitchell, and they play all covers. Yeah. So, but they're better players. They're better than what I was doing before, which always seemed to be my goal as I went along bands. I got to find
How'd
guys.
How'd you find Joe DeLiva?
Joe DeLiva, he was friends with some guys I knew in town, and just I saw his
cover. Maybe a drummer. I can play drums.
Well, he had a cover band going for a while, and those guys kind of they split up and they weren't doing it. So I just got a hold of them. I knew
you
I knew,
told them to do it.
I thought it'd be a good idea to do it. Let's get something going.
You did it. So you were joining this time.
Well, they already had their little thing.
Right.
And I just got there and I go, hey, why don't we just start doing this? We'll do some covers. And then we would play some
shows. So you're asking him, like, to regroup.
So, yeah, Sean Mitchell, the guitar player, and he said, sure, we can go down to my dad's basement practice, brought the drums over there, and did the same thing, started doing tunes, and started playing parties and gigs with these guys for a while.
What were they called?
We called it the Gear.
The Gear.
The Gear. That was our code word for Motha back then. Getting some gear, you know, a sack.
Whatever. Okay.
Get the gear. So,
after that...
That went for a while, and then
what happened with it?
I don't know. Just
sputtered.
It's a cover band. It's sputtered. Sputtered. Whatever.
No recording.
No record. I don't know. I did.
So what was the thing after that?
I think I got all hostile at some 4th of July party with some idiot threw a M80 next to my head. I'm nearly blew my eardrum out, you know.
And I got hostile on your band, guys?
Because it was one of their buddies that fucking did it. That's why.
Okay, and so that's over.
Your friends are not my friends.
Yeah, so what's the next music thing? That's over. But the plug is yanked on that dream. Yeah. So what was that?
So the ambition after that was, like, I got to start doing original bands because I liked that better. So I go out, I answer another recycler ad for some dude in Manhattan Beach. This guy, his name is Al Lay.
Yeah.
And I go and answer the ad, and he's just playing. He's got some rock and roll guitar player guy, and we're just doing Beatles-like songs. He was way into the Beatles, like to sing like Paul, play poppy bass, that kind of thing. Started doing that with him for a while, and we found another guitar player that worked with the guy. They both worked at Warehouse Records. These guys were audiophiles. They just love rock and roll. They live
West Side, though, not Pedro.
Yeah, over there in Manhattan Beach. Yeah. And so I started playing with them. Every weekend for maybe two and a half years, I'd drive all the way to Manhattan Beach to go play in his garage.
And no gigs.
No gigs. Just not for jammed. A while. First couple years, just jammed. First year with the first guitar player. No, we did do a
gig.
This is
the band that ended up called the Charms, right?
No, this is not. This is not the Charms.
Not?
No, not the Charms. But I did some high school gig with the first guitar player, and then when the second guitar player came along, we did a couple club gigs in L.A.
What were they called?
We called it Psycho Acoustic.
Okay.
Psycho.
But the Charms were from over there, too, right?
They were. And I did.
Did they know each other?
No.
No.
No. But while I was playing with those guys, this is in the early 90s, 91, 92, I was kind of getting tired of doing what I was doing with them because it was like a lot of playing music and crying and bitching about little small things that didn't matter and not really going out and gigging and staying busy.
They never recorded?
We were just in the garage, a little four-track, little task.
Crack.
Shit, yeah, just turd recording. As a matter of fact, both those guys in that band turned out to be recording engineers later. One taught in one of the largest recording schools in Northern California, and the other guy worked for A&M Records as a.
But what happened
engineer.
At the same time? You're sputtering out on this.
That thing, I'm getting bored with it, so I go, I get the recycler again, man. It was my Bible, finding rock bands.
Well, everybody.
And I was looking for somebody that I was thinking, I just want to go on tour and get out of town. The hell with this shit, you know? I'm tired of fucking around with guys that seem interested in doing it but aren't really That's not really their goal. Is to,
you know, still got that same drum set that you had from the first?
No, I had this white kit that I got.
Oh, so you got another cut.
I got another kit. I didn't have the black one. I had bought another kit, a white kit from Mike Ortega.
What was that black one?
Premiere. I ended up selling it to
somebody.
What
was this white one?
The white one was a Ludwig. And it came, it was all multicolored, different.
Premiere, you know, that was Keith Moon.
Yeah, but this one was kind of old and it really had cruddy hardware. It wasn't very sturdy. It was like, you know, it didn't take a lot to strip stuff on it. Like, you know.
What about the Ludwig?
The Ludwig was better. It was a more like an American late 60s, early 70s model. You know,
Premier's
remember the
England,
orange,
right?
Remember the silver swirl and the orange swirl ones that they had?
It was Premier's England, right?
Yeah, English drums. The Ludwig were American.
Yeah.
So I got all these random drums and I
bought. Oh, was it the same kit?
But they're all Ludwig.
So it's pieced together.
Pieced together, all different Ludwig drums. And I ordered some stuff that's kind of like similar to Formica that they use for covering drums on the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a countertop kind of material.
Sure.
And I ordered it all white. And what I did is I got a heat gun. And I tore off all
so
the
old. So made them all look like.
Made them all white. I did it all myself. I recovered the drums, which I'll probably never do again because that was a headache. That was hard to do. It took a lot of work. It took days and lots.
Probably trippy with the acoustics.
I don't know. I mean,
they didn't mute them up.
No, because it's on the outside. It's on the outside of the show.
You went and you answered some more ads.
Yeah. I had this kid at the time, and then I answered another ad, and this time it was for a band who was looking for a drummer to go on tour.
And they happened to be in Manhattan Beach.
And they were in Hermosa Beach.
Hermosa.
Which is close to by next door.
Next door.
And I was still playing with the other guys in Manhattan, and I answered this ad, and I went to
Since you're driving out there anyway.
Yeah, I thought, well, I'm going to look for something. Uh-oh.
Keep going.
We got intermission music.
What?
Sucker.
Hey, Rudy. I'm good. I'm doing an interview right now with Jerry Trebitich. Yeah. It's heavy, huh? I'll help you out with it. I'll help you out with it. Call me tonight. Okay, Ruth.
You too, stay safe.
He's reading The Road by Cormac McCarthy. I gave it to him.
Yeah.
It's a heavy father and the son thing at the end of the world.
Lot from Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music out with Edifice of Shit by No Youth, and Spitting in the Infinity's Asshole by Coffin Worm after that. Spitting in Infinity's Asshole. That was tough. Kittens after that, Kachinas. Death of Gust by Brett Netson. Hot Stupid by Black Bananas. For that, finally, something live from Home and Garden from last summer, Heaven. Brother Tony on the bass. Here's more Jared Trepetich and his journey through music.
Anyway, so you answer this ad. So our band that's going to go touring, so they're going to get out of town.
Yeah, they got. I finally found a way to get on the road and do this because I figure at this point I've been doing bands for about 6 years or so, and I've gotten better as I've gotten in better bands. I brought up my chops and I kind of like got a better understanding how to play rock bands. So I answered his dad and the guys had me meet me down at the Poop Deck, which is this little bar that's down in Hermosa Beach right on the Strand. And they come over and they meet me there. And
by Lighthouse.
Yeah, right down there at the end of Pier Avenue.
Yeah.
So I go down to this place and it's like 10 cent beer night. They got little Dixie cups they fill with beer, 10 cents a piece. You buy 10 of them at a time and just... Dude, it was total binge drinking college night kind of thing. But it was like, man,
there's no college here. It's so funny.
Yeah, but that's the way it was. That's the way it was. That's the way it seems just like outside of a college.
Yeah.
And I show up and I meet the guys and they started talking. They go, talking, whatever, drinking beers. I end up getting hammered with these guys.
Yeah.
And before the end of the night,
this is the Charms.
The Charms, yeah, this is the Charms. This ends up being the band, the Charms. And they told me. At the end of the night, I'd sit there and got drunk with them and had a few laughs. And go, oh, you're in the band. No audition.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing at all. They had no clue, and I was in the band. And I go, you guys don't even want to hear me play first? No, that's all right. You're great. You know, you're a funny guy. You kind of remind us of some kind of Frizz. We're going to call you Frizz.
Yeah.
They started calling me this name Frizz, which I could not stand at all. I hated it. So I started playing with them and...
No, you start going on tour.
Well, you know, start doing gigs and stuff. You know, they had a record coming out, and they had already made the record when I showed up, so I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started doing local gigs with them, whatever, and get ready. And the plan was that for the record to come out, then go do the tour after the record came out. So when the record comes out, you know, they give me a copy of it, and I pop it open, and I'm looking at the name of the guys in the band, and they got the name of the drummer, Frizz Quadrata. And this was all printed up before I ever showed up.
But so you're not on the record anyway.
I'm not on the record, but they started calling me Frizz just to fit the name of the name they stuck on the record before I ever showed up.
Yeah.
So whoever walked
in, that guy.
Yeah, whoever the drummer that was going to walk in the band was going to be.
No, but the guy who's on the recording actually.
No, there was four guys on the recording.
And they don't have their names.
No, they have their names. Additional drummers on the bottom. That's what it says. Additional drummers.
But they may have invented this persona.
Yes, right. And I walk into persona. You know.
So you start touring with them. This is your first tour.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, then I'm with them for a while, and I went out and did a tour up to the Northwest, up and down the coast.
Yeah.
And learned a little bit about what it's like to go on the road with a bunch of guys stuffed in a van and play music, and it was fun. I liked it. You know, I got a taste of it, and it's what I wanted to do. But then something happened. I guess it was the way of that band. They ended up giving me the boot. And I thought, what did I do wrong? Well, really, I didn't do anything wrong. They fired drummers.
Oh no! But what, didn't something happen in the boat?
Oh, I got into a little scuffle.
Bassman?
With the bass man, because we didn't get along too well on the tour. He was kind of a little uptight on the tour for some reason. We had to crash out in the van one night in our sleeping bags, and it wasn't a big van. It was just a regular, Econoline standard, three-quarter ton, whatever.
Short boy.
And they had the little box in the back with the loft, and then they had the bench and the floor. And I was on the floor, and the bass man was on the bench wearing the sleeping bag. We're yelling at each other in the van like 2 a.m, freezing our asses off in Spokane, Washington. And all of a sudden, fists start flying. And, I don't know if they ever tried to fight in a sleeping bag when you're laying on the floor with some dude on the bench above you. But you really don't have much of a chance of winning. Yeah, you can't even defend yourself. Yeah. It's like, there's no chance. You're just going to get pummeled. And that was it. And
so what was the band after that?
Now, the band after that was...
Is that Billy?
No. After I did that, I played in something called McGregor's Garden for a little while down in Orange County. It was just kind of trippy, weird pop music. And I wasn't really too into it.
How'd you find him?
Recycler again. At this point, I'm starting to realize that I don't know if the Recycler was the best way to go. I keep running into this. It was a way.
Yeah.
I really didn't have a lot
of... Pedro didn't have a lot of things going.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of people in town that I knew to play with.
And, so why not?
I didn't know all the people.
It's like rolling the dice. So you play with these cats for a little while in Orange County.
For a little while, and I record some stuff, and then...
Really?
Yeah, I recorded some
stuff. Was it released?
The guy put it out on a cassette. I don't even think I ever got a copy of it.
That would have been your first recording.
No, it was Joyride. They released a cassette.
They did release
a cassette. We did record a couple songs and released a cassette.
No, okay.
We did. It was like a demo cassette, but it got handed out to people, and it was actually a release.
Okay.
And then,
what happened with that prize?
That thing, I don't know. I just kind of left. One of the first gigs I do with the guy, the lead singer guy, got so fucking drunk on margaritas, he played like shit. It just was fucking embarrassing,
So you didn't want to be in
and
the
I
shit.
Just didn't want to have anything to do with it after the embarrassment,
So what's after this?
So after this, I come back to Pedro. I got a buddy, Pete Sebastian, that played in a bunch of different Pedro bands that I knew of. I got together with him and Migs DeLiva, who got me to do some one-off school project with him and my friend Johnny, to go play up at Marymount one time. So I called him up, and I got Pete, and Pete knew this girl, Andrina, that lived up in L.A., and we got together and formed this band called Sugarcoat and started playing pop songs. And I think that's where I first kind of ran into you once or twice, because I was using Borelli's pad to practice.
Linus,
no, this is before Linus.
What for Pedro Show? I didn't mean to cut you off, Jer. I'm cutting this thing into chunks and got music in between. And, of course, the best way was probably a big shotgun the whole thing through. But Jer told me he thought it might go good with mixed in with music. He was, Jer knows how to yammer, but he's still kind of a shy guy, man. He really is. Modest cat. And so he asked me to interleave with some music there. Wow, we're going to come up on the end of the second hour here. Yeah, moving right along. Okay, it's the second hour of the May 31st edition, 2012 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. May 31st, 2012, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. ¶¶
いっぱいのお茶あなたを座らせるまで待って待っていっぱいのお茶あなたを曇らせるまで待って待って見えなくなるまで待って聞こえなくなるまで待って冷たくなるまで待って待って
Swat for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with A Rest in Your Eyes off the brand new Yucca album. I think they say Yucca. The only Yucca I know in Japan is Yucca Honda. Anyway, maybe that's how they say it here in Spanish too. Maybe I'm just an idiot. Okay. Probably so, Baka my son. Mate by Ear Diorama Ear. Then Jagger's Fish Shop. Fuck. The Nice Sharp Pencils. Off their brand new album. But I have a record 2 years ago that Ben gave me. And some tunes are on that. In fact, Jagger's Fish Shop's on it. So, I don't know. It's got confused. Maybe there are some differences. Four or five songs are different from both discs, but they're 2 years apart. So anyway, I don't care when it was made. I love Nice Sharp Pencils. Then we heard Seasick after that. Al's song. I think they're from up in Berkeley. I'm going to try to play there in the fall. Got a tour coming. And finally, The Lone Gun by Fist Fight in the Parking Lot. And Somebody Else by The Scapegoat. Back to Jerry Trubetich, drummer man from San Pedro with the beat in his hand and a story to yammer on you.
Like, I was doing...
Ain't that much later on.
Not much, but it was like a year. This was like 93, 94. Yeah. I was doing this Sugarcoat Band, this pop band, and it was going really good, and I thought...
Cracking at Burley's.
Now,
this is in my prac... building,
yeah, the same
across
room,
the hall.
Same building you're in, yeah.
Across the hall. He's in the old showers.
Yeah, it's old
Adam
tile.
Gaxiola
it's old tile.
In the old sinks, and I'm in the old shitters.
Yeah, the old shitters.
It is. Dude, it was a row of them. I had to yank them all out. Yeah. I left actually one in at the. You can't see it because shit's covered it. But, I mean, stuff. But
does it still flush?
No. I turned off the water and everything. I was using it as a prop. It was holding up something. But then it got buried with all the other stuff.
It would have been good if it was still working because you could turn it in your prac pan.
Yeah, but
you flush it down.
We left the one on the other side of the hall.
That one works. How come yours didn't
work? That's what we did. That was the plan. Let that one be it because it's not in the chamber with us. Come on, man.
Like a prison cell.
Okay, you're playing with these guys.
I'm playing with those guys, and we
of course I know Miggs.
You know Miggs.
He's
yeah,
a teacher now.
Yeah, and actually, he's
great bass player.
Actually, yeah, I think he's the union representative for his local in Torrance, where he used to be a teacher for a while. Now he works
UTR.
He's a union side. Yeah. Anyway, I'm playing with them for a while. Do a demo. Things are going great.
Yeah.
Looked like it was going to get signed. You know, Tommy Davis was helping us out. He had worked at Epic at the time, so he's trying to shop us to Epic. And it was going well. And then...
You let Burley record you?
No. We went to a real studio and did it. And the demo came out good and everything, and it was... We had, you know, feelings about the guitar player. We kind of told him, you know, we either got to get it together or we got to get somebody else. And he was kind of coming along slow, so finally we just decided... to scissor the guitar player and bring in another guy that was a studio guy, which is probably, in hindsight, the worst thing we could have done because that kind of killed the vibe of the band.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like, it was a bad idea. Plus, the girl was kind of, she would pre-disaster shit. She'd kind of make things go wrong.
Drama.
Yeah.
Drama.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so that band.
That thing kind of got on, and while I was doing that and I was using the prac pad over here in Gardena at the time. We had moved on from Borelli's. While I was playing in there and Sugarcoat was kind of falling apart, there was a heavy metal band called Chiselhead that went in there and started playing with them because I'd never done metal before and I didn't know what the deal was with it. And they kind of just let me go in there and play. And the drummer was the singer, so he just got up front and sang and I played drums.
Yeah.
And I played in that for a while and... during that time is when I was doing Linus, and
which
I was doing,
Pedro
which was
musicians.
Just all Pedro people that I knew, Joe DeLiva and Mike Bailey and these kids from ska band, you know, Donald and Sam and those guys.
The Horns.
Yeah, the Horns.
It was an improvised band. Talia was the singer.
Yeah, Melting Pot. The guys from Melting Pot. And then Talia coming in and just improvising. There's a bunch of people. And I had guest people come in and whoever I can get to play. And I did probably like 70 shows with this band, and I think we rehearsed once. So that was...
It was a jam band.
It was a jam band. But we ended up with songs, because you jam all the time with people and turn into songs. And we're doing that, and I think that's how you came across me at the point, because you came
Sacred
down to
Grounds.
Sacred Grounds. I was doing the show there, and you were hanging out there one night, and you saw me play down there doing this thing. Well, I was still... I always had 3 or 4 bands going at one time. I mean, I was just... I'm always... was going at it with different
ones. But that thing fell apart.
Yeah,
right?
Some stuff were bands that were like band.
And the Chiselhead, what, you quit that?
I still did that for a while. I did that for about 4 or 5 years.
What about the Even...
Even Rude?
Yeah.
That was like the end of Chiselhead was the beginning of Even Rude.
That's what I thought.
And Chiselhead did for a while. We actually made a record and it never got released. I mean, I did the whole record. And I don't know what happened. I don't know why they... I'm missing a whole band. I missed a whole band.
Which one?
Back in the early 90s, I knew there was a hole somewhere. I moved out of town for a year down to Orange County in 93.
Yeah.
And I joined a band called Vitamin L.
You talked about that other OC band.
Yeah, but that was a different guy. It was about the same time. You know, it was after, but right after that other OC band, I found...
Yeah.
But this band I found through my girlfriend who was here in town. She knew the guys in the other band, and that's how I... got the audition. I did that band for about a year, and I also made a record with them, but no tour.
So that's your first record.
First recording was Joyride doing.
No, but you have
that was a demo
released
studio
record.
Released record, yeah. This is 1993, 94. It was a full length record. I think it was like 73 minutes long. It was a really long record. You know, as much time as you could put on a CD at the time and release it is how much music we put on the fucking thing.
Is it jams?
No, it was all songs. Oh, songs, yeah. They were all, you know, it was more complex music. It was more, it was kind of like Primus and a little bit like Fishbone and stuff that was going on at the time. And, you know, a lot of complex, a lot of multi-parts in the songs, long songs. Anyway,
what
it did all
that.
Huh?
What happened with that then?
We made a record and we did a lot of shows in OC and some up in L.A.
And then what?
And then I quit the band.
Okay. And you went to go do Chiselhead and Sugarcone.
Man.
Sugarcoat.
Yeah, that was kind of there. Yeah, I did that for like a year. I just kind of...
Sugarcoat falls apart, Chiselhead turns into Even Rude.
Yeah. And Chiselhead, after a few years of that, no more Even Rude. But then at that time...
Well, what's...
I was
no,
already,
you got to talk about the Even
no,
Rude.
No, but
what's
I was already
rude?
Playing with you at the time because I was doing the Madonna Bees.
Well, starting.
While I was doing the Chiselnut.
Starting, because Even Rude... You were doing at that time too.
Yeah, I did.
In fact, you were doing little tours with them.
Yeah, 98. I started playing with those guys because they decided.
Oh, it is. If it's 98, then it is after.
Yeah, well, I already done the Madonna Bees with you for a couple years. I was already doing that.
I told you, Madonna Bees started with Ron Dinkins.
Yep.
And Dezzo.
Yep.
Dezzo's out. Okay, I'll do this at my practice pad because I want to practice every day. I didn't really have idea of gigs.
Nope.
And Ron, okay. And Barilli's across all. Barilli says he wants to do it. He writes something weird on my hatch. And okay, come over here. And we practice his pad too. And then, some freakouts.
Who? Dinkins?
No, not well.
Barilli?
Dinkins would have some drama, but Barilli had the big freakout. So, got to find another drummer. You know, Ron said, "Don't worry." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then I found out, he found another drummer. Now, I didn't know that he found out using my name in the recycler. But
I actually answered that.
That's what I'm saying.
But no, this is not how I got into it. I'm going to tell you what happened was that he had put the ad out, and this was a year or two before I started playing with you. He put the ad out.
I know, because it was after
he was looking
thing.
For a drummer for playing Madonna songs with Mike Watt. And I saw this ad in paper.
Well,
I go, really?
And
that's what
know.
He put in there.
Dude,
so
you
I
gotta understand, I didn't know he was running that ad, okay? I had no idea.
Yeah, I know. That's like, apparently it wasn't the best way to go find it.
But anyway,
I answered the ad and
you answered
I went.
It.
Well, I answered, I went and met Ron, and after I met Ron, I didn't want to do it. Because Ron just tripped me out. It was just kind of, everything was strange. The behavior was strange. where he was living, just his mentality. I didn't think he was serious. I thought he was faking the whole thing because it just didn't seem real.
Yeah.
And it didn't, so I kind of blew him off. But then, you know, a couple years later, you saw me playing, and you're the one that came or called me and asked me if I wanted to do it. Because I think you talked to my roommate at the time and got my phone number from my roommate and gave me a call. So
I thought it was Ron.
Nope, it was you.
Dude, it was Ron.
No, it wasn't. Ron was like the couple years before, and nothing happened with that. You saw me play at the...
All right,
and
all
then
right.
You call
so you come
me.
Over there.
Yeah, you call
and
me.
All of a sudden, after a few months, there's dancers.
Yeah. Well, we started doing
well,
it.
First, no.
No, we started.
It was just practice.
It was just practice. It was like...
First, there's a dancer in the room with us. Then there's two more dancers in the hallway.
Well, you had okay.
Well, the first dancer actually sang with us, too.
Yeah.
Okay, sang with Ron. Yeah. And then, actually, ended up doing some gigs because I had just done some Porno for Pyro stuff and Pear had some dancers. I thought, fuck, he does gigs with dancers. I'm going to try this, too. So we get a gig at Sacred Grounds. And it's actually the first time I saw the dancers because they were always in the hallway. You know, never saw them. We couldn't.
Yeah, they were doing their routine out of sight.
They were doing practice with us.
We just opened up the door, but they're out in the hallway doing their thing.
We never saw them. I saw Glenda, but she didn't really do her dances as much as sing along with us.
She didn't really have the synchronized moves with the other girls.
No, the other ones, and that's why they were practicing.
Yeah.
But never saw them, and that's why I first saw them. Was when we did that gig, and I wore a mouse suit.
Yeah.
And I think the next day we went up to K-Rock and got interviewed by some clowns up there.
Yeah, but we showed up in our costumes and we brought the gig.
No, actually, it wasn't the next night. It was
no, it was a couple
gig.
Of it was the next gig because we played Jabberjaw.
We did a gig at Jabberjaw.
That night.
Before that gig, we went to the K-Rock.
That's right.
But it wasn't too short. It was a month or two after this gig.
Well, the thing I remember...
And what happens, Ron had a fucking freak out. Had a freak out.
He did.
And then I went on, you know, okay, whatever. And I went on tour. And I guess during the tour, he really had a freak out. He went to Sacred Grounds and threw his the coffee shop where we played. And
he smashed his keyboard in the front of the coffee shop.
Saying he deserved free coffee because he helped make them famous or something.
There was other things that happened. And he kind of
so all of a sudden, Ron's out.
Yeah.
Whoa, what a place to leave you at. Some Madonna B drama there. Didn't mean to have you hanging, but let's do some more music.
Jimmy, take your medicine! Take your Ritalin, Jimmy!
He's the only honest man in the whole damn room. He likes messing with his head, doing acid and shroom. If you can't stand a run, girl, he makes you so mad.
Half bad, he's smoking bombas, he's a man, and I just said he go to medicine, and everybody Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show, a last bunch of music for this edition. As soon as I tell you the names of these tunes, we'll go to the last chunk of Jer ruminating about his old music days, how he got going, why he is where he is now. And actually, we just played a couple tunes from two of the bands he's talking about. We started off that chunk there with Tourette's by Evenrude. Jer drummed for them. And then Rite of Spring from Vitamin L. He talked about them, too. And for that, we had our very own San Pedro, great band, Toys That Kill, from their new album, Cold Boys. Respect to you, Mr. Todd. And then finally, we heard piece number one, something from a gig on October 2nd, 2008. Joe Berardi, Emily Hay, Toka Honda. God, I'm... Same thing has happened with El May, you know? Toka Honda, El May, they got a gig. It's the day I'm leaving for Stooges shows. You know? Or it's the night I got another gig, or I don't go to that many gigs, except, of course, the ones I work, but there are some I really want to see. I wish circumstances let me. Anyway, enough of the suspense. Back to Jer and his, we left you in the middle of some Madonna B drama, and don't want to do that. Let's resolve it. Watt from Pedro Show.
And Ron's out, and so you said you knew somebody from a wedding band, which you have neglected to mention. You're talking about all these rock bands.
I forgot. But the whole thing about the wedding band is I didn't do it very much. I was just
still did it.
I really did a little.
This is important because this is your connection with Pete Maisich, who ends up in Madonna B's and then ends up second man.
That's okay. We can hit the rewind button right now. We'll go back, okay?
What happened was,
this guy
had a wedding band and needed a drummer to fill in when the other guy flaked.
In like 89 or 90, I started getting calls from Pete Maisich once in a while to fill in for his drummer when he couldn't do the weddings.
Right.
And it was all polkas and waltzes and then rock and roll at the end. You know, they do it for traditional, the Italian and the Croatian weddings, the Slav weddings are in town. And once in a while, I get these calls, and I would basically do no practice, maybe a practice, and then go out and do 4 hours of music.
Yeah, I know.
And it was Pete snapping his fingers for the tempo and saying what time signature is, go. And that's how I did all the songs all night long.
And they're doing traditional polkas.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff was just, you know, circle of fifths round and circles over and over again and just follow the bass player.
It's Slav dance music. It's Italian dance.
And I kind of started figuring out.
But when Ron's out of the picture, you mentioned that you know somebody who knows organ.
I knew a guy that played Hammond organ and sang. And he
comes in. For some reason, he wants to wear, because Ron was dressing up like Madonna, I guess. So Pete, no one ever told him to do that. I never told him to put on a wig and a dress and shit.
Yeah, but it wouldn't look right unless he did.
Then his wife, Lil, ends up in the band singing with Glenda. But Glenda starts being more a dancer, kind of. And, it ends up a seven-person band. It was a pretty big band, and we were doing a bunch of gigs. But it came time for me to, you know, I'm doing other projects. I'm doing another. I'm going on tour again.
Yeah.
And so I don't really need this everyday prac band. And even though we were doing gigs and they were fun, especially with the Mazich's, that was really interesting. Because the Ron Deacon's one was actually only two gigs, but it was many practices.
You did years of it.
Many practices. Yeah. With Borelli and then with the.
I think I said okay. something when I joined, and I go, hey, I know you've been doing this for like 3 or 4 years and you haven't done a gig. I mean, is this all we're going to do?
Yeah, I do all kinds of gigs.
But then we started doing it. I just wanted to see the feel out of that
band. I never thought of that band as a gigging band until those. And how did those dancers get in the band?
I don't know.
Yeah, me either. Must have been Ron Dinkins.
Well, I think Ron knew them from the coffee
shop. Because they were like from Dondo.
No, they would hang down at the coffee shop where Ron was hanging
really?
Out, and he met
them.
They're
not Pedro people.
One of the girls is. One of the girls, I think, is Pedro.
No. Those were Dondo people.
Really?
And Glenda was like even further.
She was from out there, too.
Yeah, I used to have to pick her up with Ron.
I know, so did I.
These guys didn't have transpo. But anyway, it was fun for the practice. And then when we did the gigs, they were trippy.
They were weird.
But they ended up, I like the organ bass drums. And so I wanted to have a band called Second Men for my second opera and use those elements for a power trio.
Yeah.
But before that, I take you on tour with Tom Watson.
Yep.
And it's the late 90s. No, early 2000s. Late
it's
90s,
like
Vince.
2001.
First, I take Vince out with Tom. Then I take you out with Tom.
Mm-hmm. So that's like 2001. But I was
they're the pair of pliers. You're the John and Terry show.
Yeah, but there was the Even Root thing. That kind of happened.
No, I'm talking about with me.
With you, yeah. That was after.
Just Even Root, I think, did West Coast tours.
I did like little West Coast tours with them all the way up to Washington and out to the
desert. Did you guys record?
I did a demo with them, a 5-song demo, which, you know, I listened back to it and I realized it was just done poorly because it was done in the middle of the night. Never recommend that for drumming. Always want to be fresh.
Yeah.
Not start at midnight.
All that Minutemen was done like that.
Really?
Because it was Morricano, dude.
You just whenever you had the chat. It was that.
It was called downtime.
Oh, the midnight.
It would be half.
Yeah.
No, midnight to 8. It would be half price.
That's how.
We also used tape.
Yeah.
You know, we had to. It was Morricano. But I know what you mean.
I think I did
better that. Than if you had your choice. Yeah. It's better not to.
But it was called last minute because it was all done on a budget. So it was a last minute call. There was free studio time somewhere. And I basically.
Anyway, why'd you quit those guys?
I don't know. I think too many circles in the desert. We really weren't going anywhere but circles in the desert. Not going any further than Arizona and any further northern.
Yeah, in this band, though, you met your wife.
Sort of. She was at my house at the time hanging out with my roommate's buddy. And she was helping out the band, too. She was helping sell merchandise.
So, in a way, Even Rude was important
kind
in your life.
To help me, yeah, the connection to my wife was definitely there.
That's what I said. Okay, so I start taking you around, but the idea is to make a second opera with Pizzo. And we finally do that in 2004 here in Pedro.
Yeah.
At Karma.
Karma studio. Recording, which is not there anymore.
Yeah. It's called Bad Fish now. It's a store that sells clothes.
Records. Yeah.
Maybe some fish.
I don't know. I haven't walked in there.
I was there. Rudy took me to see his boy, Big Nick.
They played in the back?
They pogoed right on me, yeah. I was sitting on the couches and the dudes were slamming right on me. The guy told me to put the couches there to hide the holes. No, from their knees. They fly. These are young. These are like 14-year-old kids. They're flying into the walls. And
go ahead first. Ask questions later.
For their knees, probably. You know. Maybe their heads. It's Three Stooges.
Yeah, they're young. They're like rubber.
Anyway, we did that. And you could only do partial tours after that.
Who, me? After 2004, I could only...
After the album.
Yeah, because...
So that's where I get Raul Morales to fill in.
Yeah, because I got my job full-time as a longshoreman.
Right.
And same thing with Pizzo. Pizzo was kind of waiting for that
same
to happen. And he was behind me, though, in the count. But
he just got his book.
Toothless Grin. This is something that you got with Matt Waskovich. You and Matt Waskovich got together. I'm not sure if Petco was part of it, but you and Matt Waskovich and John Petkovich... And me, and Pete Mazich, and Raul, and
pretty sure Wasco started it.
Wasco started
I remember his idea was, here's some lyrics, and here's some chords.
And that, so I put baseline.
That's what
it.
The first email was, and you put baselines with Click Track.
Yeah.
And you did a couple songs. So I thought it was gonna be like a 2-song project, and you know, guys in New York like Chris Greer and Thurston Moore are part of it, and Byron Cooley. Is it Cooley or Coley?
Coley.
Coley.
And he's West Mass.
He's West, yeah, but he's East Coast. And these guys, and then over here, Jack Brewer, Tom Watson, me, you, Raul Morales, who plays drums with you now.
Basically both the second man and the missing man.
And Pete Mazich, yeah. and then Jack Brewer. And
Jack Brewer from Saccharine Trust.
Yeah. So we have 3 singers and a bunch of people playing, and we started doing all this on the internet.
Well, what he means is trading files.
Yeah.
We actually trading don't files. Ever play together.
We're never in the same room together doing any of the work except for maybe me and Pete. That was
but most of it's trading files.
Most of it was just getting a bass line and a Click Track and then figure out a part and go into Pete's studio and put the drums down. And then everybody else would add their parts and send the file,
Yeah.
And this started easily 2.5 years ago. We started doing this. And we're still doing it today.
Almost done, though.
We're almost done. We actually recorded some stuff last night.
Yeah, I think all that's left is 2 Jack Brewer singing tracks and 4... Tom Watson.
But there's
tracks.
Also 2 more tracks we're all going to do drums on.
That's right.
And I don't know what we're going to do because...
We've got 10 songs all together.
It's an album's worth of music. Yeah. And it's interesting how something like this comes along because there's no prac, you know, and I can only imagine if we had to try to play this live what would happen, you know. It's like, would anybody be able to remember what they did, you know? Because there's a lot of layering. There's a lot of things going on. And
I remember my part.
Your parts are pretty basic. I don't think your parts, you know, your basic structure. You stick to basic structure so somebody can form around it. It's like, you know, making a skeleton house for the big gingerbread to go on top. You know, yeah. You're just like the little skeleton and we're all the little pieces of cake and frosting going on the outside of it, you know, sticking it all together.
The big story, right, of your music. We're going to make another Second Man album next year.
Yeah.
But what advice would you give to some young person starting off in music?
Oh, man. Listen to a lot of records because somebody already did it before you. And whatever you're going to do, somebody already did it. Like sort of, you know, in the basic sense, you're going to learn from what people have done already. But then you can make it your own by... throwing your personality into it, you know, whatever your thing is. With me, it was like, I played in so many bands. I mean, I'm just mentioning the bands that I spent some time with. But in reality, I've probably been in more than 40 bands through the years, you know, just in and out of project after project. I always learned something from each band, playing with different people, learning how to play with people, listening to people, trying not to overplay, you know, trying not to underplay. I don't know, it's a lot of thinking with your brain all the time when you're playing music, using your brain. And maybe don't go through 40 bands. I don't recommend that. That's not the best way to learn. It was good for me.
But find some people and try to stick with
them. Sometimes you find to stick with the people that are good and try to stick with that one project. I think that if I had found that in the early days, I would have been really stoked on that, and that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, but maybe there's some luck involved with that.
I didn't have that kind of luck.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though, but you're giving that for advice.
Because, like, when you started early, it wasn't your first or second band. You really were doing the Minutemen, you know? And that's the kind of thing I wanted to do, but I was bouncing from project to project.
Oh, because I had one friend.
You had a buddy, and you stuck with your buddy, and you played, and that was what I was looking for. I didn't find that.
I know you got to get over to the docks. You got to load a boat, right?
Yeah, I got to finish.
Right.
The boat's good. It's not going to sail.
Until the boat's finished, you don't stop.
I don't stop till the boat's finished.
So I want to thank you for coming in early then and doing this with me.
Sure.
Watt from Pedro Show. Well, there you have it. Of course, you left out some stuff, and we rattled on about stuff maybe that wasn't so crucial, but it's important, I think, for people to hear Jerry Trepetich's story through music, you know. I just love the guy, and all the folks have on the show, in a way, it's just to prove to people there's many, many, many ways to do music, to come from, to be at, to go towards. Okay, so it's just like if you look at your thumbprint, it's unique. and probably your journey is too. Even as a listener, even as a gig guard, because what's life about really except taking turns? Even at stuff like that, which is most passionate. Jared said something about Toothless Grin. Oh man, I'm out of time. But I can tell you that it's a proj that's put together trippy, you know. Dudes ain't in the same room. A lot of us are in different parts of the country, all flowing files. Started with Wasco giving me chords and words and then making a bass line and people piling stuff on. Jared was trying to explain. And maybe he did a good job of it. But that's what this is. It's a 10-song album. We're going to be done with it soon. Next week, the Hand to Man Band album comes out. So does the Anywhere album come out. Now check the news part of my Hoot page if you want to know about stuff like that. Also do a couple gigs with Tom and Raul next week. That's MikeWatt.com or HootPage.com. HOOTPAGE.COM. Again, thank you very much, Jerry Trebetich, for coming on board. Hey, it's the May 31st, 2012 edition of the Watt for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.